And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to bye week. We told you we were going to do it. Spent a lot of time being so introspective about this Gopher football team and figured everybody's got a little bit of time to themselves. The weather's nice. You're going to be either mowing your lawn for one of the last times, putting away deck furniture, going to pumpkin patches. Is that something that people still do, Luke? You're the one who's hip. And
I think it's apple orchards and pumpkin patches. And yeah, you know, those things, the hay rides are probably something to look at as well.
Well, we figured we want to kill some time on your commute to wherever you're going to enjoy your open fall weekend, because the next one does not come until November 9th, which is deer opener, of which I had to get that drinking game out of the bottle right there. But November 9th is also deer opener. Can't wait for gun opener for that one. But we have a lot of thoughts and feelings about this Gopher football team through three games. I wrote about it on GopherIllustrated.com. We also have talked to the member of the podcast that will be rejoining us in about a week's time, Mr. Luke Buer.
Yeah. Yeah, we're excited to have Derek Burns back to break down the Rutgers game. He has committed that he will be able to join then. I don't know that we'll attribute all these things to him because it will just be hard to remember those. But I have talked with him, and I know you've talked with him as well, just generally about the season. So know that there's some information that probably is Derek's that, you know, we'll get credit for. And you know what? We'll take it.
I love stealing Derek's ideas and thoughts and feelings for him that he's not able to defend himself. But we did both talk to him. He will return for the Rutgers post game. I know many of you are tired of hearing our dulcet tones. Well, guess what? You get Derek Burns, my favorite second cousin, now that he has repaid his debt to our second aunt. I'll let him tell that story. I'm going to pause there for dramatic pause. Like that's the whole thing within our family right now, that I'm glad Derek took care of it. And I'm going to come. He can defend himself in about 8 days, but we got some thoughts and feelings about where this Gopher football team is sitting at 2-1 heading into the Rutgers game next weekend and how most importantly they can improve. Because if I've learned anything since I departed San Francisco in the wee hours of the morning on Sunday, there's a lot of angry people on Twitter, on Gopher Illustrated, in my emails. And I will first say I appreciate that because it means that you care. The worst thing that can happen is apathy for any of us. And I know there's a lot of, in the words of Dan Barrero, consternation about how to fix this team, considering the poor performance they put up offensively, defensively, special teams, and whatnot. And Luke, we're trying to be a Davenport of love to try and give solutions to the Gopher faithful. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think so. I think before we get to that, I think we have to address the elephant in the room, Ryan.
Chad Smith's going to play homecoming. Red Hot Chili Peppers drummer Chad Smith.
Yeah, that
is playing homecoming at halftime.
That isn't the elephant in the room. I think the elephant in the room is the significant number of tweets, the significant number of Spotify comments, and the significant number of GI messages of you know, death by 10,000 something that you inadvertently said on the previous podcast. Everybody found it really funny. Do you even know that, what you said?
No, I'm not going to repeat it. I have no idea what I said. This is why I hate to go back and listen. What did I allegedly say?
It starts with a C. And ends with an unt.
You know,
and I heard it and I didn't know what to do.
The funny part about that,
I just let it lie.
Specific word is that is not, is not,
that's in no one's vernacular.
Well, and I don't know how much I want to reveal. I can certainly attest. I hate saying that word. Because it is so sharp and aggressive to me. Now, there are other members of my own household who will drop it more in, and I immediately look at them and say, that is I can't say that word. That is so aggressive, and it's a very aggressive word.
You,
I didn't know I said that in the last pod.
You, you accidentally said it. I heard it. And then I muted myself. I laughed to myself. And then I was like, should I say something? Shouldn't I say something? Should I text Ryan James and ask him what I should do? Like, so I just posted it. Many people saw it. I think many people got a kick out of it, because it was very obviously an innocent mistake. And I bring it up. Why it's the elephant in the room is that if you had young kids or whatever, and they heard it, and I want to apologize first and foremost. If anybody deserves criticism, it was me. I knew, my bad. So we're gonna leave it at that.
I dropped a sharp. Did I actually?
Yeah.
Like, are you guys all gaslighting me?
No, dead serious. You like.
Yikes! Like that's my bad.
It was a totally.
What was I trying to say at that point?
You were saying death by 10,000. You were trying to say cuts.
Jeepers creepers.
Or by not 10,000, but 1,000.
Well, I was glad I could provide a little bit of comedic relief.
At least there's some levity in that episode. The more I get away from this game, Ryan, at least the Cal game, and we're gonna look at the non-conference as a whole as we're sitting in this bye week. I really think that Cal was better than I thought coming into this. One, they were elevated by their quarterback play. I think that the offensive line was better than we thought. And I think that the defensive line did a poor job of keeping their lanes and keeping him contained. We talked about that a little bit, but I really think this group was probably better. I'm very fascinated to watch them going as the season progresses. The ACC is very much up for grabs, not saying that they're going to win it. But I think that they were better than expected. And then the more I think about it, too, something we didn't talk about much was the two time zone thing. One thing I was going to ask you to do ahead of this episode, and I didn't, and I apologize, was it would be interesting to see the stats, because I just have this gut feeling. But the stats of teams that travel two time zones and then play the late game, I feel like that's even worse. I often feel like those teams perform very poorly, and that's what we saw in the Gophers in this specific game against Cal. It happens. It's disappointing. We would have loved to see them win that game, be 3-0, but at the end of the day, they're not, and the rest of the season's the rest of the season. But I just want to make sure that we are giving Cal some credit, because I think they're better than what I anticipated going in.
And I thought their coaches coached really well in that
and
game.
They've traditionally coached well. Like, I've been impressed with that staff for a while. I don't think the record shows it all the time, because it's a hard place to win. It's a hard place. It can be a hard place to recruit to. But yes, I agree. I've often been impressed with what they've done.
I will say, 3 months ago, I didn't think anything of the Cal football program because of the dumpster fire of portal attrition, and then big money donors meets Justin Wilcox, who they didn't think was running the program well. Mm-hmm. And then you look at where they're at. They're 3-0 heading into conference play. They take on San Diego State this weekend, but in the vein of the two time zone thing, I guess I will say, these are the teams that have to come to Cal that will travel, because they're an ACC team in the Pacific time zone, which still flabbergasts me. They get to have Louisville come over, or excuse me, no, they don't. They have North Carolina, Duke, SMU has to come over. Yet when they travel out, they get to take on the corpse of Virginia Tech, who fired their head coach. Mm-hmm. Austin College might be the toughest game they have left on their schedule, which is in 2 weeks' time, because they miss Miami and they miss Clemson.
Yeah. Like,
this is a team that if Sagapolotele stays healthy, could win 9 games. It's still going to bug me that Minnesota had the lead with 4 minutes left in the third quarter, and then they proceeded to spectacularly implode upon themselves, which we get to decipher between now 5-6 days later. But that was a good Cal team, and yes, they do deserve credit.
Okay, things that I want to talk about. I don't think we're giving Drake Lindsay enough credit. I think he is playing really well. I told you that I went back and spent some time and tried to watch as much of the offense as I could again, because one, I'm fascinated with Drake Lindsay. I heard him on what is traditionally the PJ Fleck show, right? And he was well spoken on that. And so it kind of motivated me to take a look at that. And I'm telling you, man, your point about him having to be perfect couldn't be more spot on. If he just get a little bit more help from these receivers, I think this would, he could be a, he very possibly could be a national story.
It's not a popular opinion. For those Gopher Illustrated members listening this week, there's been a lot of discussion, I think healthy discussion, about how to get the offense to be more explosive, how to get the offense to be more efficient. And the thing that we haven't spent a lot of time on GI about is Drake Lindsey, which just speaks to how good Drake Lindsey has been. Now, to give some perspective, do you want to guess where Drake Lindsey ranks in Pro Football Focus's passing grade of all quarterbacks across FBS football so far?
Mm. So in FBS, how many quarterbacks are in FBS?
So for the purposes of this conversation, I'm going to use the starting quarterbacks of, say, 130 teams.
I'd say he's top 40.
He is the fifth highest ranked quarterback. He's got an 89.2 PFF passing grade. He's been good. He's been really good. Any expectations I had for them, which our listeners know coming in, I was trying to be bullish on him. He's been really good. Mm-hmm. The issue is the pieces around him haven't given him a lot of help. And Drake has made a throw or two each game. He's not perfect. He's a redshirt freshman. But to be fifth in the entire country in PFF passing grade, which it's not perfect. No advanced data services, but it's just a data point.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't help but think he's, as we sit here today, completing 60% of his passes. If his receivers or pass catchers could catch the football or make a contested catch, imagine what it would look like then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the crux of the issue is no one seemingly wants to put this on the pass catchers. And it's not just on the pass catchers, to be clear here.
Yeah.
But they have been bad. They have not been good.
No,
and I don't understand the amount of people running to the defense of the receiving corps when we could have the discussion 2 years ago, because you're going to hear us say this name a lot in the next 10 days because we have Minnesota's next upcoming opponent in the Rutgers Scarlet Knights when Kirk Shiraka makes his return to Huntington Bank Stadium. So does Rob Smith, but also so does Ethan Kaliak-Manis. And Ethan Kaliak-Manis 2 years ago was capable of, and this is an analogy I'm tired of giving, he had one pitch and it was 100-mile-an-hour fastball.
Mm-hmm.
Drake has the ability to throw multiple pitches in multiple shapes and put the ball in a spot where his receiver can make a play 90% of the time, which for a redshirt freshman at the University of Minnesota, this fan base has not seen that in a very long time. The issue becomes the receivers aren't catching the ball cleanly. They're not making contested catches, and they're also not running after the catch. Mm-hmm. And that's where I want to start is yards after the catch has been a big problem for this receiving corps so far. If I start to get into some of the numbers of which I certainly can here, it paints the picture of how Drake can be good, but the offense isn't explosive. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
And that's a consistent problem we've talked about is there haven't been enough explosive plays. And a function of that can be, you know, the way you manufacture them, the shots that you take, but also to your point, the yak.
Which so much of this comes down to catching the ball in space and being a playmaker. And mm-hmm. I looked at the two games, which it's a two-game sample size. Yes, it's not very big. I don't know if it's predictive, but in retrospect, let's talk about it is, against Cal and Buffalo, I'm taking out the Northwestern State game. That team was absolutely horrific, and I don't know that you learn anything about how good your skill guys are in a game like that. Javon Tracy, Minnesota's receiver, has forced 5 missed tackles.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to guess? The other 3 receivers of Lemecki Brockington, Jalen Smith, and Logan Loya, who, yes, is still on the team, and, yes, he has run the 4th most routes amongst all Gopher receivers, which we need to talk about the Logan Loya thing, because apparently people believe that he is now prime Danny Amendola, Wes Welker, pick your slot receiver for the Patriots of the last 20 years, and the Gophers are just not using him. My question, in a very Dan Barrero long-esque way, is how many forced or missed tackles have the other Gopher receivers forced in those two games?
Well, if you said it was five, I'm going to go with five.
Zero.
Zero. Wow. Little Mackey hasn't even forced one. Wow. Okay.
And that's where you also get into the yards after the catch.
Yeah.
Which is a problem for say Lamecki rocket ship, Luke. Okay. Mm-hmm. Lamecki leads the team in receptions with 10. Do you want to guess how many yards after the catch Lamecki Brockington has against Buffalo and Cal combined? Or even in all three games combined, just for the sake of this.
He has
10 receptions for 136 yards thus far.
He's probably got 4 yards after catch.
He's got 17 yards after the catch, which comes out to 1.7 yards after the catch per reception. That is so mediocre at best. Mm-hmm. Now, some of that is scheme, some of that is routes, but my point being, you combine those two together, and then the third of this trifecta is contested catch opportunities. Last year, Minnesota's pass catchers, so Daniel Jackson, Elijah Spencer, and so on, ended up with a 59% contested catch win rate, according to Pro Football Focus. Those 50-50 balls, they were better than 50-50. That quartet of receivers for this year, Tracy, Lamecki, Logan Loya, and Jalen Smith, what do you think they are in contested catch opportunities thus far?
25%.
27. That is a problem when 50-50 balls are now 25-75.
Mm-hmm.
It just, the whole thing together makes sense to me that Drake is having to be perfect. And the other part too with it is there was a thread on GI today about the lack of explosives, and they are a problem. No one is denying that they're not a problem. Mm-hmm. Where I believe Minnesota is below average for yet another season in explosive plays of over 20 yards. And seemingly the thought process was, well, of course, Minnesota doesn't throw it deep. Do you want to guess where Drake Lindsey, of the 18 starting Big Ten quarterbacks, ranks in throws of 20 or more yards down the field?
In what group subset? Sorry, I missed that.
So starting Big Ten quarterbacks.
Okay, Big Ten quarterbacks. I would say he's top third.
He's what?
He's in the top third. On ADOT.
He is ninth in the Big Ten. He has attempted 11 throws in three games of 20 or more yards down the field. He's average in the Big Ten in terms of chucking it down the field. Where he's not average is what his average depth of target is per throw. Now, average depth of target, I know we're really getting into the weeds here, and I apologize, but it's essentially how far the ball travels past the line of scrimmage. So if I say 5 yards is his ADOT.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm talking the average Drake Lindsey pass goes 5 yards past the line of scrimmage. What do you think it is in compared to the other Big Ten quarterbacks, the other 18 to the first three games?
Well, the rank or the distance?
Both.
On his ADOT again, right?
Yep.
So I misunderstood your previous question. I thought you were talking ADOT. I still think it's top third, and I bet it's closer to 7 or 8 yards.
Drake Lindsey is third in the Big Ten in average depth of target. His average pass on 76 attempts so far goes over 10 yards down the field.
And you know why that probably is, right?
That is the highest ADOT of any Gopher quarterback in the PJ Fleck era.
Yeah, you know why that probably is, right?
What do you mean?
Why that is almost 10 yards?
Why?
Because
they're always in third and long.
They're always in third and long. Like, because they haven't been very successful in first and second downs, right? That to me is they're behind script. Now, I messaged you a nice graph earlier today that was showing the average third down depth and then your success rate on that, right? And Minnesota is very much an outlier, kind of standing alone, right? Their average distance is something like 8. It's probably like 8 or 7.75 yards or something, but their success rate is almost 60%, right? Everybody else is kind of clumped in, like their success rate, the shorter it is, the higher it goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the longer it is, the lower it goes. But Minnesota's success rate is high. If they can find a way to find success on first and second down, I think this offense can start humming. But the problem is they're catching themselves and they're shrinking their margin of error for success because they're not having success on first and second down.
It's a great point. It's one of the things I wrote about this week for Gopher Illustrated members behind the paywall was things for the Minnesota football offense to work on during the bye week. Because one of the things with the offense is it's which data set do you believe is more predictive going forward? And let me ask you the question, because I know you don't read what I write, and that's fine because we talk to each other for so many hours a week. Minnesota, their current offense against Buffalo and Cal, that is my data set. They're averaging 389 total yards per game.
Yeah, yards aren't the problem.
Where do you think that 389 yards versus FBS opponents ranks of now the 9 years of PJ Fleck at Minnesota?
Probably one.
It is not first. First okay, is 2019, then. Which okay. was the greatest show on TCF Bank Stadium turf at the time. Where do you think it after you think they're
I think it's second.
You're right. They are second best of any Fleck offense in the like that is crazy to me because you also combine it with their to your point, they're converting over 50% of their third downs right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they rank third from the bottom in the Big Ten in those two games in scoring output. So the question is why? And one of the things I came back to was, do you know how many times in those two games, Minnesota has gotten into the opponent's territory and not come away with a single point?
I don't know that. I would imagine it's not very good, though.
9 different times they have crossed into an opponent's territory and not gotten a point. So the two schools of thought, before I run you through those 9 different drives and what happened, is which do you believe is more predictive? And I'm not asking you, Luke. I'm asking the listeners to start to think about this as I prepare to go through the data. Which do you believe is more predictive? Minnesota being really good at putting up yards, Minnesota being really good on third down, or Minnesota just being a bad offense in terms of scoring output? Because those 9 drives, what happened? They punted the ball 3 times on a 4th-and-13, a 4th-and-7, and a 4th-and-5. You had 2 turnovers on downs, which was the Jamison Gears tush push against Buffalo that seemingly no one between PJ Fleck and Greg Harbaugh was told, it's not 4th-and-inches anymore. It's 4th-and-1.5 yards. Maybe we don't run this play.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had the 4th-and-8 against Cal, where Drake tries to force one to Javon Tracy, where he should have just checked it down to Lameke Brockington to grab it. You had 2 interceptions, 1 off the bottom of a foot at the 21-yard line. The other one was that 3rd-and-10 against Cal. You have a missed field goal from 51 yards. And then you've also got an end of game, which was the 16-play drive that would have ended in points, but the game ran out. But 9 different drives to get into opponent territory without scoring is insane. I don't know that I've ever seen that. I think in an average game, my acumen would tell me it's probably 2 for a normal team. So to be at 4.5 on average per game in this instance is crazy, Lou. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Now, do you think it's more bad luck? Do you think it's more bad offense? The answer I know is in between, but that's where you have to start to put your kind of count your ducks in the row here of saying which one is going to figure itself out and which one, I'll ask you, Luke, do you believe is going to start to figure itself out with Rutgers, Ohio State, and Purdue on the horizon?
Yeah, I think there's a solid chance that they figure it out just with additional reps and time, right? Because we can get into this more, but I do think the offensive line is playing better than I thought, having watched some of this back. I'm maybe a little bit more bullish than I was going into the season in some of what we've seen. I know you've advocated for maybe some changes, but I think it has been better than we thought. And just the fact that Drake is playing well, I just think that guys will come around eventually. I mean, maybe it's wishful thinking, Ryan, but I believe that the early EPA stats are bad on early downs, right? That's one of the reasons I said they've not been very good on first and second down, but they are really good on third down. And where do you make your money in football, Ryan?
Third down, Mr. Luke Buehr.
Yes. So that's where you're gonna find points. It's hard when you find yourself consistently in third and longs to be able to consistently sustain a drive. So if they can find a way, one, to get Darius Taylor healthy again, but also find a way to get these early downs in more advantageous situations, I think you can get it. I'm drinking the Drake Kool-Aid for sure.
So one last note on the passing game would be from talking with Derek. We mentioned it off the rip, but his most frustrating part of the Gopher offense right now is the receiving core. And they're,
yeah.
And I know I got permission to say this from him. He believes physically this receiving core is on par with whatever you believe is the best receiving core of the Fleck era. Now, many of us, I including myself, would say 2019, which was Bateman, Johnson, a young and healthy Chris Ottman Bell, Demetrius Douglas. And he doesn't quite understand why they are struggling to get open so much, why they are struggling to win contested catches, why they just flat out are struggling to catch the football.
Yeah.
One of the areas that I think all three of us agree that with the running back injury issues that Minnesota has, and we'll get to them in a second, I think one of the ways to mitigate the run game stuff that is going to be a problem against Rutgers and Ohio State certainly is going to be going back to a shorter passing game.
Yeah.
A more, not even shorter, a quick passing game that we saw Max Brosmer love to go to last year.
And we haven't seen that so far, right? A lot of them have been long developing. And that's reflective in the ADOT number, right? So,
well, and that's where someone like Logan Loya can get on the field more in 11 personnel. I will remind people, Logan Loya has been on the field. Logan Loya has run the fourth most routes of any Gopher receiver. He's behind Jalen Smith, Lemecki Brockington, and Javon Tracy. He's run 38 routes, but he only has 5 targets. Mm-hmm. So do you believe he's not getting open? Do you believe he's not being looked at by the quarterback because he's that far back in the progression? I think it's somewhere probably in between. I don't pretend to have watched enough Rob Smith, Rutgers-level defense to know where Minnesota wants to attack them, but I do know to try and be better on early downs with your running back 3 and your running back 4 now going to be carrying the load next week against Rutgers, I would try to get the short passing game to the tight ends, to the receivers, get that back into play if I'm Greg Harbaugh, because I know that without Darius Taylor and probably AJ Turner, it's going to be tough sledding for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
I know that some people are thinking to themselves right now, Luke, did I miss something in terms of an injury update on Darius Taylor or AJ, Darius Taylor, AJ Turner? Did Fleck say something? You know, dang well, PJ Fleck didn't say something, but this is me telling you from what I've heard. Let's just go by the data for Darius Taylor. And I don't remember if we did this on the last episode.
We did do this. I mean, I think the most realistic is Purdue, right? Just given the timeline, like the last couple of times have been 25 to 30 days. Purdue will get us at that. Maybe he could get back for Ohio State. Probably no point in doing it. So let's save it for Purdue.
I believe he's going to be certainly on the doubtful side for Rutgers if his injury history with soft tissue injuries remains true. So doubtful for Rutgers, questionable for Ohio State. And if he's not back by Purdue, we're going to have a lot of thoughts and feelings about the Gopher training staff for the third straight year struggling with hamstring injuries. It's the third straight year because it was Cody Lindenberg. It was Darius Taylor. Last year was Pierce Walsh. They got Darius back to play in 25 days last year, and then he was healthy for 12 games. But I've also heard the AJ Turner injury against Cal is no bueno.
Yeah.
Which means you're going to be looking at Femi Ejiboy and Luke's favorite Washington Husky, Cam Davis, carrying the load. Maybe some Grant Washington, but I do think you're going to see a lot of Femi and you're going to see a lot of Cam Davis. The issue is we need to see more from the tailbacks. And that's where friend of the podcast, Daniel House, loves to deep dive the data on the run game.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very smart in this regard. And if you're not already, you should subscribe to gophersguru.com. He is a dear friend of the podcast, and Luke and I are both subscribers. And one of the things he talked about this week was the Gophers have been below average in run game success rate. Mm-hmm. Against Buffalo, they weren't very good, and against Cal, they weren't very good. Well, part of that is the scheme, of which I know many people have thoughts and feelings about how horrific, apparently, the run game scheme is, which I will remind you, it just doesn't look as good because Mo Ibrahim isn't running it. I will also reiterate to people, Derek, one of the things he and I discussed, Luke, and you can feel free to interject, was Derek likes the run game scheme, which is a very unpopular opinion in this market right now. He specifically liked how Minnesota was trying to bully Cal up front for the first 15, 20 minutes. And he noted that Harbaugh saw that and that it didn't work and that they changed the running scheme, starting with that long 27-yard Femi Ijeboy.
Mm-hmm.
And things got better after that. So they weren't just trying to force a square peg into a round hole for a full 60 minutes. Could the run game have shifted sooner? Probably, but hindsight like this is always 20/20. Did I miss anything that Derek also said something to you?
No, I also think he mentioned to me that he is higher on the personnel than he maybe even was last year when it comes to the offensive line, especially with run blocking. And I think that's something interesting to note. I looking back, have been pretty encouraged by the offensive line too, given how much turnover there was, right? And mm-hmm. and also some of the youth that you're playing.
Yes, and that's where I think Nathan Roy has surpassed any expectations I had for him so far.
100%.
Now it's going to get a lot more difficult here, yeah, very quickly. I think Greg Johnson has largely been a lot better at left guard. Ashton Beers is someone who at center has been more consistent,
been solid
at any point than what Greg Johnson was last year. To me, it's the right side of the line where I don't think Marcellus Marshall has been that good.
No.
And I think
Dylan Ray
has largely been Quinn Carroll last year, where he's been better in run support, but he struggles in pass protection. And that's not an issue that's new to the right tackle position at the University of Minnesota. I would probably insert Khalid Tafai for a series or two at right tackle against Rutgers to see what happens. But I know that change is very slow on the offensive line.
Yeah. I want to get back to your point in Daniel House, just to quantify Minnesota's run game success rate. I'm looking at Parker Fleming's site, Stats Awards, cfb-graphs.com. I did the preview for Minnesota Rutgers. Currently, as it sits today, Minnesota on rush game success is 114th in the country.
And that's where I look at even like missed tackles. Again, I want running backs who are freaking elusive. And if you're not going to be elusive, you're going to need to be Mo Ibrahim, who is the king of turning 1 yard into 5 yards and 3 yards into seven, and he can, or negative 3 yards into two. There's a lot of value in that. And I look at what Minnesota has to build upon going into the Rutgers game. Femi Ijeboy, in the last game where he got his first significant carries, he generated 9 missed tackles forced. He's now got 11 for the season, which leads the running back room. He's got 11 missed tackles on 24 snaps so far. Darius Taylor is behind him with 7 missed tackles forced on 33. The issue is Cam Davis needs to be better. Cam Davis has toted the rock 20 times, and he has 1 missed tackle forced, according to Pro Football Focus.
I'm just going to say, though, having watched Cam Davis a fair amount, I just don't think that's his thing. And I think the question is, like, let's use him in situations where he can be successful. Like, where he's usually successful has been historically the goal line.
So. Well, short yardage and goal line.
Yep.
I would just say yards after the contact. I mean, he's averaging under 2, which is not where you want to be. Now, are they putting him into spots to be successful? I think we can certainly discuss that. But if you're going to continue to run Cam Davis out there on third down and short yardage and green zone, red zone type of stuff, he's got to be more efficient. And I know that there's a lot of hope behind the scenes that he's showing that in practice, from what I'm told. But it needs to start to show up on Saturdays, because Femi, I mean, is forcing a missed tackle 1 of every 2 carries sustainable for him? Boy, I hope so, because that would be really fun to cover for the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pair him with Darius Taylor when he gets back, and AJ Turner whenever he returns. they just need guys to make plays is essentially the theme of skill position right now. You recruited these guys to be good with the ball in space. Mm-hmm. And largely no one's making men miss. No one is consistently catching the ball clean. If it's not designed for you to get this, like if it's designed to get 3 yards, they're only getting 3 yards right now, which is the problem. Their playmakers aren't making a man miss to get 7, to get 17, to get 27. So as much as it is everybody's least favorite coordinator, Greg Harbaugh, it's players also got to go make some plays here.
Yeah.
And it makes an offensive coordinator and a quarterback look that much better when guys are making guys miss, when they're being elusive. Mm-hmm. These are Big Ten athletes, so go be a Big Ten athlete is also my thing here.
All right, let's catch a quick break, and then we'll talk some defense, maybe some special teams. We maybe could even get into some coaching. Fair amount of focus on the offense, just given just how much there's room for improvement. Hey, Ryan, I have a quick question for you. Do you have to pay for your electricity?
I absolutely do, and as someone who likes to run their air conditioner quite a bit here during the summer, I know that my bills energy-wise are getting exponentially higher.
Now, imagine just for a second that you're my dad, and you don't have to pay for electricity. Actually, you make money on electricity. And what I mean by that is because he has pivoting solar arrays that were installed by Blue Horizon Energy, he is generating money every single week.
That sounds like a heck of an opportunity.
So if you have a commercial business or you have real estate, or maybe you're a farmer and you want to maximize some of the land that you have, reach out to bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. Again, fill out the form on bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. They will reach out to you and you can learn a lot about the opportunities to be able to generate money for yourself. Ryan, once again, Gopher Gridiron Radio is brought to you by the Burns Insurance Agency. And if you are looking to save money on your insurance, I don't know who isn't in this day and age, don't hesitate to reach out to an independent insurance agent like Bill. He is going to help you find the best deal possible.
He is. And those fine folks at the Burns Insurance Agency believe in service. And his goal is not to be the biggest insurance agency in the world. It's to be the one that gives you the best possible service in giving you everything that you need. I mean, many Gopher fans have contacted him. I'll be the first to tell you, I remember Austin, if he's listening, he came up to me while I was doing the pregame show last year, said, "Hey, I switched to your father and I saved $700 on my home and auto." Now, I'll tell you this, Luke, as someone who actually submitted a claim on their house here in the last week because we had a hailstorm roll through here in Roseville in late July, it's been incredibly easy for me to go through him, work with a roofer, work with the insurance agency, and it's very – I don't have to do anything, and I'm hopefully going to be getting a brand new roof here very soon. So if you're thinking to yourself, I'm paying too much for my home, my auto, my commercial insurance, whatever it may be, we live in Minnesota, Luke, but he is also licensed in both of the Dakotas, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. So if you think you're paying too much for insurance and you want to support a giant Gopher fan, check them out at insurancebyburns.com or email him today, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
All right, let's talk a little bit about how the defense can improve, what we've seen so far. I think overall, Ryan, the defense has been decent, right? I would say even probably tends to pretty good. I think the stats support that it's pretty good. But there are areas that I think we thought were going to be strengths haven't been. We can talk about why that has been. We can also just talk about the disappointment that was the Cal game, maybe a little bit more again. Yeah, again, back to it, you got to give Cal some credit. But all in all, when it comes to this defense, I think the place that you got to focus and you got to start is safety. And this is a group, Ryan, that we had a lot of high hopes for. It wasn't just two guys, right? It was three. It was including Aiden Goosby with Kerry Brown and Coy Parrish. And I think that right now, It would be safe to say this group hasn't been very good.
No, they haven't been, which has been an issue. It feels like, and I know that you share this opinion and so does Derek, so I don't want to take the glory away from both of you. I just want to loop you both in with this opinion, is it feels like the safeties have all been trying to be 2023 Tyler Newbin, which is a big problem. Tyler Newbin was very, very good. Tyler Newbin leads the University of Minnesota all time in interceptions. But Tyler Newbin, in his final season, was the king of freelancing and trying to make the big play every play, which does not work at safety if everybody's trying to do that. And I think that's what this safety group has learned, hopefully, through the first 3 weeks of the season. Now, before I say any more, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I have brought that up. I do think that's been a problem. You know, I think safety generally should be a position that's pretty darn boring, because you're playing your, if you're playing your role well, and you're in the defense in front of you, especially, is playing their roles well, I think you increase the offense's opportunities to make big plays if you are also hunting big plays, if that makes sense. And and that is what we saw with particular Newbin in 2023. And I think some of what we're seeing here, not to pick on Kerry Brown, but if you remember, was the Buffalo game, he bit on that
double move.
Yeah.
And he bit on a double move against Cal.
Yeah.
Which, if teams know that your eyes aren't where they're supposed to be, which if they're in the backfield or wherever they are, they're going to just start trying to double move you. And I also wish that, I don't know that it was relayed up to the higher ups from the training staff, that Kerry Brown got banged up in that one and that he wasn't at 100% against Cal. Now, I've heard that he should be fine and good to go against Rutgers, but he was also a little banged up there. The point is, with that group, their eyes aren't in the right place and they're all hunting turnovers. I will be the first to tell you, there is no team in the Big Ten right now that needs to start to figure out a way to get turnovers flowing again.
More than Minnesota. Yeah.
We'll get to that in a second. But these guys need to start to wrap up more consistently.
Yes.
Take better angles of the football and just do their job. As you said, safety for the large portion of the game is boring. You keep it in front of you. You take the right angles. And if it does get into a second and third and long, and you know it's passing downs. Sure, if you're playing on a, you know, cover two, cover one, whatever it is, in your side of the field, and you're reading a route concept, go be a playmaker. But there's too many guys right now trying to do too much, and it starts with Coy.
Yeah, and in generally speaking, you know, I haven't gone back and watched the Coy interceptions last year. Safeties tend to make plays on bad throws, right?
Well, you think about the one that ended the USC game.
He's just
out there playing center field. The one that ended UCLA, he's just out there playing center field.
Yes.
He also made a great play in terms of he broke on a route against UCLA, had an interception. He had a tip ball against, I believe it was Rhode Island. Like, that's where you get to be an athlete.
Yep.
But he almost had one. He would have had one against Cal if there wouldn't have been a pass defended at the line. But you're never going to fault the defensive line.
No, absolutely not.
It just sucks that if he doesn't bat that and it goes right between the field goal posts of his hands, Coy Parrish goes 75 yards the other way. Coy might be the player of the week instead of being the scapegoat.
Yeah.
But so is life. And for Coy, I do wonder how much Minnesota is going to take off his plate.
Yeah.
I wonder if they just scrap the whole offensive thing, scrap the special teams thing, and say, go be a all Big Ten caliber safety because we need it defensively right now more than anything.
Yeah. Or just
if
be.
If they do that, what would be your opinion?
I don't hate it. Because I think right now they need it, right? Because until the offense proves that it can consistently score points, they need to be as strong defensively as they can. And frankly speaking, Coy needs to be better defensively. They need him to be better defensively. Now, what I will say is, hey, maybe a spot here and there, definitely throw him in on special teams. That part I might get a little bit frustrated with, but I think the offensive thing, in some ways, I think that was, as much as I hate to say this, that was the staff trying to manufacture some exposure for Coy.
I'd argue Coy looked pretty good. As
he did. He did.
He might be like top three pass catcher for them.
He might be one of the top three guys getting separation for sure. But my point is that, like, I'm not sure it's always needed, and it's maybe too much to put on his proverbial plate that you talk about so much. Can we also just talk about how sometimes just doing your job is more important than the splashy plays, right? And when I say splashy plays, I mean like sacks, forced fumbles, those, you know, turnovers are always great. I maybe shouldn't say that, but sometimes the best thing you do is do your job and force an incompletion, or do your job and they gain 2 yards instead of 15 yards, right? Those are the things that I feel like right now I'm thinking mostly to the Cal game again, because it's the most recent one. If you keep your lane as a defensive lineman, maybe Sangapolatele isn't getting outside and making a play, right? The pocket collapses around him. He's forced to make a tough throw instead of being able to dance around. These are the things that are frustrating me defensively.
Let's stick there with the defensive line, because that'll lead into my turnovers rant. Is your 1-1 selection of Anthony Smith that caught the ire of many a Gopher fan who is appalled that you wouldn't take the boy from Esco?
Yeah.
I'm still happy with my 1-2 selection. I'm holding out the faith for Coy.
Yeah.
My fellow nerd who has more than 5 months worth on one specific game.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that is one of the funniest things about Coy Parrish is he is such an introvert, and I love that for him. And he's also a giant nerd. For those of you who didn't read the piece, that's fine. No one reads my work. It's fine. He loves the game Ark Evolved. Now, I have never played Ark. All I know is it's like dinosaurs and stuff like that. But he showed me on his phone. He's got over, I think, 153 days played on one of them specifically. And that is not time just loading the game, sitting there in the main menu. Mm-hmm. That is in the game. My boy is a nerd, and I love that for him. But back to Anthony Smith as your 1-1 selection. I mean, that looks pretty dang good right now, because he leads the team in pressures, hurries, tackles for loss, and sacks. He has been the player we thought he was going to be, continuing on from last season. The issue is, Luke, the rest of his defensive line is on a milk carton at times, and that is a problem. That is a big problem. Do you know how many pressures defensive linemen, not named Anthony Smith, have through the first three games of the year?
8.
I think they have combined for 11.
I
want to start here is defensive tackle. Jalen Logan Redding and Devin Eastern have combined for 1 pressure on 77 rush snaps.
Yeah.
Eastern? That is beyond brutal for two guys who are in their third years, if not four. I think Jalen Logan Redding might be in his fourth year starting.
Yeah.
You need more from them. And I know JLR played through a knee deal last week, but Devin Eastern needs to be better.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's already dealing with something, but Devin Eastern is capable of being an all Big Ten caliber player. And I will die on that hill, especially in his final season here. And I don't know if it's just a slow start to the season for him or whatever it may be, but those two specifically, Luke, if you don't get any interior pocket push, and you saw that against Cal, where if the quarterback doesn't get flustered from A and B gap pressure, whether that's from the center, from the guard, you can have defensive ends turn the corner all day. If that quarterback can just escape out the back or just sit there in the pocket, that makes everybody's job so difficult. So interior pass rush to me, something that needs to get a lot better. But also, you know, on the edge, Jackson Howard and Carter Menz at rush end. And I talked about this throughout August, throughout the offseason, replacing Danny Strigow, who might be one of the more underappreciated Gophers by the time this thing really starts to go a year or two, from now, makes a 53-man with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I didn't have lofty expectations for the duo of Howard and Menz, but for them to combine for 6 total tackles and a tackle for loss so far this season, I mean, that's not inspiring a ton of hope. And that's where Jackson Howard started strong on the second series against Buffalo with a spin move to get a quarterback hit. Mm-hmm. But when rush end, and rush is in the name of the position, when you've only combined for four pressures and no sacks in three games, I mean, that's such a tough place to live, Luke. That's my point here with the rest of the defensive line is you need to start to figure it out, or else Danny Collins is going to be doing stuff like I would do. And I talked about this in my piece is you may not want to move Emmanuel Carmo to stand up defensive end, of which he's played some, but not a ton. You also need to get a pass rush here that's not named Anthony Smith, and Emmanuel Carmo taking away snaps on pass rushing downs. To me, if Menz and Howard don't start to see the light turn on here by the time Purdue comes, certainly, I am open to any and all suggestions on how you can generate pressure with four. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely something they need to figure out. Maybe the next place to go would be linebacker. I will say this. I think Dev Williams has been maybe the biggest surprise for me. He's playing better than I anticipated.
I have no qualms with the linebackers right now. And I didn't expect to say that three or four weeks ago, because I knew Maverick Baranowski had a chance, which is why I took him in the third round of the All Big Ten honors draft. You looked at me like I was a crazy man. Mm-hmm. And I knew all about Spruce Creek Volleyball, where Maverick Baranowski was an all-state performer for them. Anytime I can see a all-state volleyball player come to the Big Ten to play linebacker, I'm going to take him. And I know you didn't like that. It was an unpopular pick. But the Devin Williams arc is a fun one to me. And that's a guy who played too early in his career, wasn't ready for the spotlight, and he talked about that for the media, where the game was really fast for him a couple of years ago when he got his first extended opportunity. He didn't understand the amount of preparation that had to go into it. Mm-hmm. And like we see so many times for guys in their fourth, fifth, or sixth year in a program, once they acclimate to the speed, once they know how to put in the correct amount of preparation, I think largely Devin Williams and Maverick Baranowski have been flying around. And I think linebacker between the two of them has been probably the strength of it. Now, they get some help from the guys up front in the run game, certainly. But I have no qualms with what I've seen at linebacker so far. Now, they're going to get tested next week against an RPO Kirk Shiraka offense, where their eyes are going to need to be in the right spot at all times to either make a play on the run or get their hands in the passing lane to deflect an Ethan Kaliakmanis pass. But are you with me on linebacker, or are there some other areas that you want to see them get better at?
No, I think that's been good. I want to see the continued evolution of Emmanuel Carmo, though. I think he can be a splash player. Yeah, and I know you mentioned him even being able to play some rush end, but he has some skills that are hard to find in college football, and it's nice to have him and have him contribute at a very young age.
He's so quick.
Yes.
And that's where he hangs his hat on, is his quickness off the line. He possesses something that Minnesota doesn't have, which is a great first step. And he's not the biggest of guys, but that's where the theory would be. He can bend underneath a 6'7" Big Ten tackle and get some pass rush. Now, you also can line him up as they have and put him in the A or B gap. But figuring out a way to put as much on the plate of Emmanuel Carmo is one of the top things I would do during the bye week, which leads into, Luke, I know you know this stack because we talked about it last week, but I will reiterate this. The number one thing for Danny Collins in this defense is to find a way to get takeaways, because this is now a problem almost going on half of a season. Mm-hmm. In their last five games against FBS competition, so Penn State, Wisconsin, the bowl game against Virginia Tech, and then Buffalo and Cal. Do you know how many takeaways, and I'm saying takeaway, not turnover on downs, in this specific instance, we're talking interceptions, fumble recoveries for the defense. How many do the Gophers have?
Wait, takeaway?
Defensive takeaways in their last five games against FBS competition.
Oh, you told me this is one.
And that one was a Zaquan Bryan interception in the bowl game.
Yeah.
for a man who loves to talk about the 78% metric,
yeah,
and that's PJ Fleck.
Yes.
The turnover margin, minimizing missed tackles, and generating explosive plays, to be 3-2 in your last five games when you have not won the turnover margin in any of those is spectacular.
The irony of that stat, again, is yes, there's the turnover piece, but also the generating explosive plays. Like, neither of those they've been particularly good in. Well,
defensively or offensively. Yeah. And I know the offense is the one that gets all the ire, but that's my response on the flip side is, where are the explosive plays on defense? Where are the strip sack fumbles? The last strip sack fumble was Ja Joyner ending the game against Luke Altmaier against Illinois.
Oh, right.
They need to find a way. And I know that many of you, including myself, saw the video that Andy Greeter of the Pioneer Press tweeted out.
Oh, yes.
Of Devin Williams punching the ball out against Cal.
I thought that was a fumble real time. Like, can we go? Can we just pause on that real quick? Why? I don't know if you noticed this. They didn't even show that on the broadcast. Like, and how the officials never got anything. That was just odd. The whole thing is odd because it was very clear as a fumble.
And I got, I would imagine, here's a little peek behind the scenes. I got the same text with the same video. And my response to that higher up in the Gopher football program was this. If you thought at the time that this was a fumble,
well, you should call timeout. Yeah.
You should call a timeout and you should challenge it, which PJ Fleck could have done.
Yes.
And I know the response, one of the responses I got back from this person was that Fleck was told on the sidelines from the officiating crew it was clearly, he was clearly down and they weren't going to review it. And that's where it's a double-edged sword of you can hang your head on things like that where, oh, we got screwed over by the refs. Or well, if there wasn't a batted pass, Coy Parrish goes 75 yards with her. Those things are kind of true. But I would say in that specific instance with the Devin Williams punch out where the guy's clearly not down yet,
mm-hmm.
just call a timeout if you're so adamant with something like that.
I think you wanted to save the timeouts just in case. Because I think that's what he does.
Like thing in the second half.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. Yeah, you're right. They got to generate explosive plays. Well, it's funny because I was saying I think on the defensive line, like sacks sometimes can be overrated, and because a lot of times, let me get back to that real quick. Sacks often can be a function of game script, right? Let me give you an example. You ready for it?
What's up?
When do most sacks happen in football games?
On second and third and long?
Yes.
Or if you're leading in a game and the opposing team has to pass.
Right. That's the one I was going to get to. And I think that's part of the problem is the Gophers, in terms of being able to manufacture sacks, or you know, is they're very often in close games they don't have the team doesn't have to throw the ball a bunch, right? That's where you're going to get it, where your defensive line can pin their ears back and get after it. So you
both things can be true here.
Yes,
the way that Fleck loves to run a game in his mind is the Jim Tressel ball.
Yep.
It's a 23-20 game, which gets him in trouble at times because unless you're dominating defensively, the offense is struggling to generate explosives. Well, on the flip side, so is your defense. So if you're not explosive anywhere, that is such a tough place to live. And that's where one of the areas that isn't talked about enough from that Cal loss is Minnesota got absolutely obliterated in field position.
Yeah.
They lost the field position battle by over 15 yards. And that was with taking DeJesus, Cal's star return man, out of the game.
Yeah.
Imagine if he actually would have returned a couple of those.
Yeah.
And that's where they're not getting any – none of these three facets against Cal were doing each other any help. Offense, defense, and special teams, and we can get into coaching here yet, but the explosives are something that against Rutgers specifically,
mm-hmm.
whether it's 15 to 20-plus yard plays on offense, to me, it's turnovers on defense. I will say it again. This is not a problem – that is just Danny Collins based.
No.
This goes back to Corey Heatherman's time. And this was a big issue. We talked about it a lot is when you don't get takeaways, your offense. Oh, okay, great. You stop the opposing offense if you're the Minnesota defense at the 40-yard line. They don't get any points. Well, your offense is going to have to try and dig themselves out from inside the 10, which they had to do a few different times because of their punt returner on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
The splash plays from offense and defense need to start becoming more consistent if this team's going to win more games.
Right. And to your point earlier, you have to be able to have complementary football, right? If you look at like the Gopher defense, you know, they're taking on a field position ranked 78th in the country, right? The average starting field position is the 27-ish yard line. If you look at the Gopher offense, they're 59th at average starting field position is the 26th. So
I'd love to take out the Northwestern State game, of which yeah, I know that I, data set I know. Does not have.
That's where I was exactly where point. I was going. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm the king of stealing your thunder. You know that.
Yeah, it's okay. It's going to be something very interesting. I think there's an opportunity. I don't think that the Rutgers defense is particularly good. And I think in some ways you have to be able to generate those explosive plays. Now, the question is, again, probably looking too far forward, Rutgers hasn't played anyone really, right? I'd maybe make the argument that maybe you'll disagree with me. Buffalo and Cal are better than any of the games that Rutgers has played.
I know some people think Buffalo stinks now because Kent State took them to the wire the other day. I watched a lot of that game from my hotel room. It is remarkable how improved Kent State is compared to what they were the last 2 years under Kenny Burns,
yeah.
Which says a lot about the coaching staff there at Kent State now, which Kent State's offensive coordinator is former Gopher tight ends coach, Clay Patterson.
Okay, yeah.
There's a lot of connections still in that Kent State staff, including former Gopher defensive lineman Malcolm Robinson is over there.
I think Ibrahim
is the running back coach. It's also like, how bad was Kenny? Yeah, like, peace and love to Kenny Burns. How pear-shaped was that thing? Because Kent State looks incredibly improved. Yeah. And we'll find out if Buffalo is as good as we thought they were going to be. They're still 2-1. They still won the football game. But yes, Rutgers has not played anyone with a pulse through the first 2 weeks. They got taken to the wire by the Fighting C.A. Benguras, former Gopher transfer legend who didn't play last year at tailback. And then they played Miami of Ohio, who's one of the worst teams in the MAC. And then the Fighting – I shouldn't say that because – Michael Vick is now the head coach at Norfolk State. Do you understand why I can't say the Fighting whatevers with someone like Michael Vick here?
Maybe.
I already got into enough trouble for things I said in the last podcast. I'm going to leave people to use the Google machine for that one. And by the time you listen to this, maybe we do know something because Rutgers plays Iowa on Friday night. We're going to learn an exponential amount about both teams. If Ethan Kaliak-Manis can continue to play like his hair's on fire, mm-hmm. if Rutgers defense under Rob Smith continues to be a dumpster fire, we'll learn a lot about Iowa too, but that is one of the, I cannot wait to watch that on Friday night.
I'm with you.
Kirk Ciarrocca and Ethan Kaliak-Manis, who are both red hot right now, both in play calling and the way they're executing, going against Phil Parker's defense. And we're going to learn some stuff. I just think to the point I'm assuming, going to make, this upcoming game, 11 a.m. on September the 27th, this is a game which both Minnesota coordinators need to approach as you need to score offensively at least 28 to 31 points to me.
Mm-hmm.
I have my doubts with this Gopher defense being able to combat Kirk Ciarrocca based on what I saw last year, based on kind of how they played a little bit against Cal. And I think these Rutgers receivers are no joke. They're certainly the biggest and best test that John Nestor and Zaquan Bryant have had to date. But it's just a game that I think there's going to be a lot of points in. And you, with the lack of talent or the lack of playmakers at running back outside of, again, Femi Ejiboy and Cam Davis are going to get their opportunities. I'm not taking that away from them. But this is a game you're going to need to put up points, Luke.
Yep, I agree. Okay, you want to touch on
anything? I feel better. Do you feel better? I feel like this is one of those episodes where we don't mean to be rude, But with all of the anger in the Gopher internet sphere, we want to try and give you solutions to think about over the weekend, going into the Rutgers game, to go into your tailgate at 8 a.m. and say, this team lost the game.
Yeah.
And there's going to be more coin flip games. There's still a path for this team. It's just these are the areas that need to be cleaned up if you're going to start to see them reel off 2, 3, 4 in a row, hopefully.
Yeah. And I'll just say this again. College football is evolving, right, in more ways than one. And in particular, I just think that there are just going to be a lot of competitive games. And the idea that the Gophers are going to consistently win 8-9 games every year maybe just isn't there. And I think it still can be a successful season. I think I've gotten criticism for this take before. That I truly believe that is how college football is changing. Yes, there are going to be the Ohio States and the Oregons, and they're not going to do it every year. Maybe I'm wrong about that, and I will eat crow. I really hope Oregon doesn't consistently have success. I hate Oregon so much.
Spoken like a true Washington.
Yeah, like just, oh man, one of the famous sayings in our it's like a sign of love and endearment in our family is I hate the Ducks. So, but yes. I just think that ultimately I'm trying to recalibrate my expectations because I think this is going to be more of the reality that college football will be in the years to come and that my kids grow up with and watch. And it's going to be more like the NFL and it's going to be more closer to 500 records. And your team could be good, but man, you're going to play in a real tough league year in and year out. And that's what makes the Cal game disappointing for fans. And I get that.
I don't know that I got many more to add on to that one.
Okay.
Look, a little walk-off shot.
Yeah. Okay. Fun to chat. We'll be back to preview the Rutgers game. I do have a little surprise for the preview, so please check out the preview. Going to break some interesting news then. It should be pretty fun. Again, thank you guys for listening. Thanks to the Burns Insurance Agency. Thanks to Blue Horizon Energy as well. And have a great bye weekend, a stress-free bye weekend, and go.